another really important thing to take into account when figuring out the rents and what it could be is if they're on a lease still. If they have 6 months, 9 months on their lease, you're not going to be able to raise those rents no matter what the market really says it could be.
That's
So if
right.
you're at 2,000, it could be 2,500. You're stuck there for now.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamanjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 253, and today is part three of 12 common mistakes investors make when structuring creative financing offers. If you're looking for a mentor, check out roimentors.com. Jeff has two mentorships, the apprenticeship program and the Creative Financing Academy. You can learn more about these mentorships at roimentors.com. While listening to this episode, if you guys have questions, please head over to the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. If you're not part of the community, just search the Creative Financing Podcast in Facebook and ask to join. Looking for a free creative finance class? Jeff hosts a virtual one on Zoom the second Thursday of every month, so bring your questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can ask your questions in the comments below. Lastly, we want to thank you for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast with your friends.
Well, welcome. What we wanted to do is continue on with our most common mistakes that at least I see. And Nicole and Cody, chime in as we go and tell me what you see, what you hear, what you think, and we'll go from there.
Perfect.
All right, let's share my screen. All right, so just a quick review. We ended with not understanding potential exit strategies. And a lot of these kind of fit together. You'll see that parts of them are based on other parts. And to me, it's like creative finance and more specifically owner finance is all about like a puzzle. And you got to make sure all the pieces kind of fit together. And when they don't, you just got a big mess. And you may have a deal, you may get an offer accepted, but it may not be that great of a deal. And to me, what we're trying to do is make mediocre deals great, or no deals a deal, a good deal even better. We're trying to create solutions, and the solutions have to work for us, bar none, right? Otherwise, I'm not sure why we're using creative finance. So you guys know this one because you've only heard me teach this probably a dozen times or so. But one of the biggest mistakes I see is not figuring out the NOI on properties before constructing offers. And I don't think I learned this anywhere. I think I came up with this. I kind of raked my mind over where could I have learned this from, and I think I kind of just developed it over time. And what it really means is anytime that we're dealing, I don't care if it's a single family home that you're thinking would be a good rental, multifamily, commercial, anything that brings in income, this is what I like to start with. And if you've heard previous episodes, you've heard us talk about working backwards, taking the rents, the expenses, and figuring out our NOI. And that's what we're going to talk about now, which is looking at an example, for instance. Boy, I got to turn this phone off. If you have a duplex, for instance, and you want to create offers on it, figure out the NOI from the very start before you try to construct any offers. And that means, hey, what are the rents? And you may have to do this in two different ways. You may have to figure out as-is rents and maybe pro forma rents. Pro forma being, hey, what could be. And now we're going to incorporate a vacancy factor. You should always incorporate a vacancy. 3 to 5% is pretty normal on properties that have more turnover. You might need to go 7 to 10%. And then all the expenses. And expenses are going to vary depending on what kind of property it is, and what the potential exit strategy would be. So, but some of the expenses to kind of keep in mind: taxes, insurance, those are absolutes, right? There may be some maintenance like lawn care, snow removal, or pest control. There may be HOA. There may be
utilities.
Yep. There may be management. All of these should go into it. They may not always apply to every asset, but they must be considered at least. So here's a quick little example. If someone's asking $240,000 for a duplex, they are bringing in $2,300 a month in rent. They've got a vacancy factor of 5%, $115 a month. And let's say their expenses total $740, okay? The money that is left over, okay, the NOI, the net operating income, would be $1,450 a month or $17,400 over the year. $1,450 is what we are able to now look at in terms of how do we divide this up? Because there's two things that we've got to divide it up into. First is, what can we pay the seller in form of debt service? And second, what can we get or what can we pass on to a buyer in terms of cash flow? Okay, there's no more money here. If the rents could be raised, okay, that's fine. Maybe we estimated on the high side for expenses, but I'd always rather be more conservative than more aggressive, especially with the way the market's going. So if $400 is the lease that you would take or that you think that other investors would be interested in terms of a cash flow, then it becomes pretty simple. We have about $1,050 max that we can now offer in terms of debt service to the seller. And now we're going to structure our terms around our payment, right? So we might offer some, you know, there could be a range where we might be, hey, on the low side, we'll pay $850 a month. On the high side, we'll pay $1,050 a month. We can vary some of our offers or offer, but we got to know it doesn't make sense if we offer them $1,250 a month, because now there won't be enough cash flow for you or your end buyer, and you're going to have a problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And you would have to include, like, if they had an underlying mortgage, obviously that makes a difference too, because that takes out of that $1,450.
Right. Well, first of all, if they have an underlying mortgage of $1,100, well, we got a problem, don't we? Now, really, the only kind of offer we'd be able to make is maybe we'd say, hey, we'll take over your mortgage and any equity you have, you got to wait on. We can't pay you on it. There's no money left in this deal to make that work.
Yeah, and another really important thing to take into account when figuring out the rents and what it could be is if they're on a lease still. If they have 6 months, 9 months on their lease, you're not going to be able to raise those rents no matter what the market really says it could be.
That's right.
If you're at 2,000, it could be 2,500. You're stuck there for now.
That's right. But you might be able to deal with, you know, a break even or a small cash flow if it's for a short period of time where then you could get to the bigger increase. But you're right. If this was way, you know, the rents were way low and now you're stuck with it for a year. Now you better take that into account when you're structuring your offers. Like, hey, maybe I can't make a payment for a certain amount of months, or hey, I got to make a reduced payment until I'm able to raise the rents, something to that effect. When I'm calculating the rest of my offer, I know where a main part needs to be, right? I can tweak things to make this work, but if I don't know this number, now I'm just guessing with monthly payments. This becomes the most important number, at least right now, in the core part of structuring an offer. Mm-hmm. Any questions? I know you guys have seen this a bazillion times. So
no, this makes a lot of sense. It's always good to see.
All right. So next one would be basing your offers on selling the property for a much higher price than what the true value is. And, you know, 6 months ago, when the market was going up so quickly that you probably could get away with this because, hey, in 3 months, it was the property is worth more than it is today. And that there's no end in sight. And you may say, hey, I sold it for 15% more than market value. And hey, 6 months from now, it's already there, right? So, but we're in a different market. And to be honest, the market that we were in was the exception, not the rule. And now we are dealing with a more declining market or slower market at the very least. And so trying to sell properties for 10 to 25% more than the value could make it difficult. And certainly if you're basing what offers you're going to make to the seller based on that, you could find yourself in a little bit of a pickle when it comes time and you're not getting that value. Plus, you got to add in, you know, some things to take into account when pricing the property. So I know that we're talking about offers, but here we're actually looking at the exit, right? And it goes back to the one mistake where, hey, know what your potential exit strategies are. And so if I'm going to sell a particular property to, let's say, an owner-occupant, for me to expect to get 20% down is the exception. You're going to miss out on a lot of potential buyers. So this is kind of the same thing, is that we kind of have to have an idea. Maybe not exact, but what can we sell this property for? Especially as we're going to start seeing more deals that are either underwater, where you know they owe more than what the true value is, or there's very little to no equity in the property. And so some of the things to take into account when you're trying to price these properties is condition. If it's dated, That doesn't necessarily affect the price, right? If it's dated, and there's lots of degrees of being dated, right? That you can have dated from 1950, which would be, you know, pink bathtubs, blue sinks, you know, that kind of stuff, compared to, you know, some different things, you know, yeah, but you'd probably still have that yellow linoleum or yellow countertops in the kitchens to, you know, parquet floor to whatever. But if it's in really good condition, that won't necessarily, and obviously as the price point increases, this may have a little more to do with the price. But when you're dealing in median home prices, dated's not going to hurt you as much. But if there's work to be done, you know, anyone can go paint a house. You can change the color of paint pretty easily. A lot of people could put down, tile or, you know, flooring, LVP, those kinds of things. People can do that on their own. They go buy the materials and they can do the labor themselves. Those are great things for owner finance type houses. When you start getting into, hey, it needs a new water heater or the appliances are shot, okay, you're not going to necessarily find specialized buyers that are going to be able to deal with that. And then it becomes just strictly a cost and potentially paying for labor. So understanding the difference in conditions of the property will be helpful. Location. Location will sell properties, and the better the location, the more you can get for it. And I don't mind locations that are, let's say, blue collar, lower income, C class type neighborhoods, but there's a difference between a safe C class neighborhood and not so safe C class neighborhood. You're going to have more difficulty getting top price in the not so safe area. So understanding the location and the crime rates within that area will help in terms of pricing. And then types of repairs we just talked about. So you got to replace the roof. Yeah, there are people that are capable of doing that. But hey, if you got a plumbing problem, unless you're really a plumber or a seriously good handyman, you probably got to hire that out, just like I would, just like you guys might. And so when you have those kinds of issues, those are either the ones that maybe you want to fix before you put on the market, or that you're giving a price discount for doing that kind of stuff themselves or getting it done on their own. Does that make sense, or did I lose you guys on this one?
No, that makes sense. The only other thing I would add is before even writing your offers, making sure you have an actual accurate value with your comps and everything. Because I've seen a lot of times where you come in a lot higher on your comps than it actually is.
Yeah.
So that leads you to think, okay, I can make a higher offer than it would actually sell for now. So making sure whether it's MLS access or working with a realtor or using Zillow, depending on your market, just getting those accurate comps.
And certainly a challenge right now as we're in more of a declining market than an appreciating market.
Yeah.
Nicole, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Nope. I think you guys both covered all the bases on that one.
Okay. All right. So last one for this particular episode is, Nicole, we all three of us have talked about this, based on offers that at some point in time that you guys have made that you asked for me to look over, right? That we're not making offers look, when we're making multiple offers, we're not making them look different enough from one another, right? So, and I'm a proponent. I just assume I'd like to make a seller a number of offers. And typically, one's going to be a shorter term, one's going to be a longer term, almost inevitably, at least if it's possible, right? That's two offers right there. There may be a subordination offer if they wanted a bigger down payment, if that's possible. If it's potentially could be done as a rehab, there may be a short-term finance offer. There may be a cash offer. There's a number of ways that we can create multiple offers, but one of the biggest ones is the term, right? We'd like as long of a term as possible. Typically, sellers want as short a term as possible. That is one of the, you know, one of the other variables is certainly down payment, right? Sellers want a bigger down payment. We want a smaller down payment. So we can structure different offers based on the two biggest variables that we're going to come across. Well, right now, one of the things that I would tell you that the shift should be is, hey, stuff that we were making offers on a 3-5 year kind of term probably need to be more like 5 to 8 years right now, and preferably more like 7-8 years. That way, we deal with whatever interest rates are going to do. They go up, they stabilize, and then we have time for them to start coming down. The values come down and then they finally stabilize and then they go back up. And if we can avoid all of that and pick and choose when the best time is to refinance, that would be the most ideal situation. So you can offer these in lots of different ways, and they don't have to be significantly different. Like, you know, I could have a $200,000 home that I'm offering $215,000 and another offer where I'm offering $205,000. Okay. It's a $10,000 difference, but there's a difference. One could be, hey, I could be using principal only and offering a higher price, or a hybrid interest rate and a higher price, and maybe even an amortized loan, you know, 3-5%. But a lower price, you know, keeping the payment to a reasonable place. One might have a smaller down payment. One might have a higher down payment. But one of the things that I wanted to make clear is that if I want a longer term, right, that I usually have to incentivize the seller to want to stay in the deal longer. And if I don't do that, if they take an offer, which offer are they going to take?
The shorter one.
Right. I mean, it's just human nature. If we can get our money sooner, I'd rather have my money sooner.
Yeah.
So it's now my job to say, okay, here's one where you can get your money sooner. But if you stay in it, here's what you're going to get because of it. And maybe it's a higher down. Maybe it's a higher interest rate. Maybe it's a better monthly payment. It better be a significantly better net or gross to the seller, right? So, and that's just
that's
go ahead.
Sorry, that's one thing I kind of struggle with. I mean, that
everyone
like
does.
The term, yeah, but it also I learned like it also helps to know like to know exactly what the seller needs. To like, for instance, the last one that we worked on, I forgot to ask how long he's willing to carry for. And so that was a guess. but I guess knowing the answers helps out a little bit. A lot of it.
I just made an offer on a commercial lead a couple of days ago. And in the notes, the notes said that he would be open to terms, but he really doesn't want to go more than 3 years. Okay. Which, Cody, ever heard that one before?
Oh, yeah, I've heard it, but it's not too feasible now.
Well, right. There's a problem with it, right? So yeah. I started to think to myself, and he was adamant about it, right? Like he didn't, and my acquisition manager was able to say, look, we'll put together a three-year deal, but I want you to see what will happen if you're willing to go longer, right? So so the three-year deal had to be modified to get to where I felt like it was safe after 3 years, which is tough. But my 10-year plan or 12-year plan or whatever it was, he netted like $400,000 more or something like that. And, you know, I want to make that clear. And I'll show you a really quick example. So here's a free and clear property. They want $240 for it. It'll rent for $1,950. None of that really matters. Okay. So we offered $250. So we're paying more than asking. We're using our hybrid interest rate, our simple interest. If you don't know what that is, go listen to the many, many episodes and YouTube videos we've done on it. And we have a payment of $975 for 8 years. Okay. Here's the balloon payment. So you can see this pays down really quickly, right? We have a principal balance of $239. And in 8 years, we get it all the way down to $183,638. Okay. And the seller nets $288,238. Okay. So, and the net's really easy to figure out that it's everything that the seller receives, right? $975 a month for 96 months, the balloon payment that's due then, and the down payment that all totals $288,238. Okay. So there's one offer. Okay. So here's a second. Now, normally people will, hey, if I want a longer term, I'll offer you a higher price. You can do that, absolutely. And I do it sometimes as well. But sometimes I can kind of switch it, right? So that makes this one look really enticing if I can pay you more and a shorter term. But you'd see in this case, I still ask for 8 years. So here I'm paying less, okay? But I up the down payment. I get it. It's only $5,000 more, but it is different. It is a different percentage. But now I'm paying 3.75% amortized interest rate, right? The payment's $75 more a month, but I want to go 15 years. And now the balloon payment is down to $144,559. But now the seller nets almost $350,000. So they met another $60,000 over the course of, 7 years. Is that enough? Probably not. But if I don't show them that, this is the only option that's in the running, right? So the goal is that, hey, if I'm going to make you an 8 year, I really got to make this more enticing. Now, maybe this amount does catch their attention, and maybe that's what they base their decision on. If I really wanted to get this accepted, I might up the down payment to $18,000-$20,000. I may even offer a little higher interest rate, and let's say I could net them $360,000 or $365,000. Now that might be enticing enough, right? But if these are too close and I'm just asking basically for 7 more years of a term, I better make it worth the seller's while. So we can play with the price, the interest, the monthly payment, and the term. What I like to do is make sure that they get different options, but they've got to be different from one another. Otherwise, don't make multiple offers.
Yeah, and I think something really important on your side is to be able to make sure you have a good exit strategy for each of them. And I know you do, but for the sake of our viewers, if you're making another offer, make sure you know what you're going to do with it if that offer happens to be accepted.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Because option one, if that gets accepted, may have 1, 2, or 3 different potential exit strategies, right? If offer two gets accepted, maybe that adds additional exit strategies. Maybe it takes away potential exit strategies. You know, if I have a cash deal here, more than likely that would be a different exit from these two, right? So understanding what sometimes my different offers come with different exit strategies. And, you know, I'd prefer this one, but hey, what I'd prefer is that we get a deal, that, you know, well, we get something where we can monetize this. So my preference might be a certain one, but all of them will work in terms of monetizing.
Yeah, and I've seen examples with this where, like, they make these two offers and they make a third one at a cash offer, say at about 180, 190, which is a lot lower than these, but if they get that accepted, they probably won't be able to move it. There's not enough room, depending on the repairs and everything.
Yep. Yeah. So understanding, you know, just because it's discounted doesn't mean that, you know, it still works for you. And to be honest, my cash is even less. If I'm making a cash offer right now, that, you know, it's significantly less. If they're going to take the cash, then it's got to be a deal for us. It's just the way it is. And to be honest, my preference would be take one of these, right? So, because there's some thought that's gone into it and how we can kind of, you know, this kind of deal may turn into $100,000+ deal over 8 years or more. This one might be more like, you know, $140,000-$150,000 deal over the course of 15 years. So, you know, the cash might be a $20,000-$40,000 deal, but just once. So, does this look familiar, Nicole? Because we've gone through some of this stuff, right? Where, we had to point out that, hey, these look too much alike. There's just not enough difference between the two.
Okay. Lessons learned.
Yeah, well, and it takes some practice, right? You know, it's already a challenge to start being able to put together one good offer. And now, hey, now I've got to put together 2 or 3 or 4.
How do I make it different enough?
Yeah, well, it takes practice, just like anything else. All right, any last words, you two? And we'll wrap this episode up, and we'll move on to our last part of this series, part 4.
No questions. Looking forward to part 4.
Appreciate it. All right, go out and create some terms.